I was an adventurous four-year-old, consistently getting myself into trouble. Mom was always telling me things that I shouldn't be doing, like playing in the swamps.
You could be swallowed up by quicksand, Davy.
I wasn't worried. I was sure that I could certainly outrun the fastest sand there was. Mom put me in an oversized, bright red shirt so she could always see me because, give me a second or two, I'd be into trouble. It's not that I intended to get into trouble. It's just that the big world was there, waiting for me to come, explore. I had no idea of the important lessons I'd learn in those days when I was just 4 years old. On this one memorable day in 1954, my mother caught me sneaking into the swamps behind our house. I called them swamps because that's what my mother called them. They were actually beautiful springs that bubbled up out of the sandy ground. So pure and sparkling was the water, you could clearly see into it. Wanting to play with my toy dinosaurs in the springs, I needed to hide from my mother and sneak into the swamps. I snuck around the old Studebaker that was parked in the side yard and then ran around the neighbor's house so I'd be a long way from where Mother could see me. I stealthily crept past the sheds behind my grandma's house and then crouched low, followed a trail into the swamps. Nobody could hide from my mother better than me. And running into the swampy field, I immediately found clear, bubbling springs. There, in a pond, resting on a lily pad, was one of the biggest bullfrogs I'd ever seen. That frog was just lying there, begging to be caught. I snuck up on him quietly, and then I jumped, launching myself towards him, arms outstretched, ready to catch him. Splash! I landed in the water seconds after the big frog had jumped away to safety. Not only did I not catch the big frog, but I landed in water much deeper than I had imagined. Soaking wet, standing in water up to my neck, I found my feet being sucked deeper and deeper into the mucky bottom of the pond. Something had a hold of my shoes, and I wasn't able to move. The more I struggled, the more I was stuck. Thrashing, struggling to free my feet, I was pulled in deeper and deeper. I craned my jaw upward to keep the water out of my mouth, and I was about to take my last breath. "Mommy! Mommy!" I cried. To my relief, there she was, with a long stick, saying, "Grab the stick, Davy. I'll pull you out." When she pulled me out, I felt a strong sucking sensation on my shoes, which were pulled from my feet. I guess I wasn't as good at sneaking into the springs as I thought I was, and was I glad.
"Davy, I warned you about that quicksand. I just don't know what I'm going to do with you. You disobedient boy, you could have drowned."
Well, I lost my shoes, but my mother loved me enough to keep an eye on me, even when I was disobedient. This is the story of disobedient Davy and the bucking bronco. 4 years old is a young age for a little boy to be called a buckaroo. My mother had it up to her ponytail with my shenanigans. I'll admit, I was a hard one to control. Perhaps it's because we lived in an area full of expanse of the earth, where there was so much to explore, so many things to see. My dad was usually gone, working in the mines or on the oil rigs or prospecting, looking for gold and silver. Mom, to say the least, had her hands full with two teenage sons, an 8-year-old daughter, and me, an unexpected addition to the family. A year before I was born, my dad had been blown up in a mine explosion. After his extended stay in the hospital was over, they celebrated their reunion. 9 months later, the stork dropped me on their front doorstep, rather unplanned for, and in many ways quite a drain on my mother's sanity, although I was much loved.
"Davy, stop that! Davy, get down from there! Davy, you disobedient boy!"
are words I remember the most as I was growing up. One day, my daddy came home from the southwestern desert, and what he had with him was a treat for a little cowboy wannabe. He had captured a wild Mustang stallion and had hopes of breaking it and riding it in the 4th of July parade in Provo, Utah. Only problem was, he wasn't ever able to tame that bucking bronco, and neither were my two older brothers. Grandma had a garden full of long carrots. We had several apple trees in the neighborhood loaded with all kinds of apples, and from watching Hopalong Cassidy and Roy Rogers on the black and white TV, I learned that one thing horses loved were apples and carrots. I'll bet I fed that horse hundreds of pounds of apples and carrots. My grandma thought we had moles in the ground that were eating her vegetables, but it was me. I had gained the trust of Rusty, the Mustang, in spite of my size and age, and I was the only one who could get close to him, probably because I was the one who gave him treats all the time, apples and carrots. Mom was not happy about my relationship with Rusty and forbid me to even go near the corral. This upset me because I was a cowboy, and every cowboy needs a horse. I knew I could ride him. One day, my mother was visiting with the Relief Society sisters, who I knew would take her mind off me for quite some time, and with so many things I shouldn't have been doing, I decided to ride Rusty. I coaxed him alongside the fence with a carrot and climbed up on the top rail. I then, without delicacy, jumped onto Rusty's back with a yee-haw, which spooked him out from under me. Flying through the air, I landed on my backside with such force that I broke my bum. Ugh! Crying my eyes out in pain, I ran to Mom, knowing that I couldn't admit that I was a disobedient boy. I told her my first story. A great big dinosaur stepped on my bum and broke it. Davy, I don't want you to ever try to ride that horse again, was her response. How did she know? How did she know? This is David Bullock with another tale from the Wasatch Back. Disobedient Davy and the Tall Tree. I was an adventurous boy and was always getting myself into trouble by doing things I should not have been doing. Probably the most influential times of my life happened when I was just 4 years old. Mom took to putting me in a bright red shirt so she could better keep track of where I was, because give me a second or two, I'd be in trouble. On this one particular day, my mother told me not to climb trees. Davy, don't you ever go climbing that tree. You're too small, and you might fall and break yourself. Well, I got to looking up into that forbidden tree, and I saw that there was a big branch that hung over the sidewalk. I ran over to the gutter, where there were always tiny little pebbles. I stuffed my pockets full of those little rocks. I was going to climb that tree to that big branch, and once there, I'd hide in the leafy-covered limbs unseen and drop little pebbles on people's heads when they walked under the tree. They'd reach on up, not daring to touch, wondering if a bird had had its way with them. It'd be so funny. Well, climbing that tree was no problem. Grabbing the bark, I pulled myself up to where my right foot came off the ground. I stuck the toes of my shoes into the crevices of the bark and reached up with my left hand, pulled myself upward. My left foot came off the ground, and before I knew it, I was going higher and higher. Finally, I got to that big branch, and I was just about to climb out onto it when my mother came out onto the porch, and she was looking for me. Davy, oh Davy, my mother called. She had her hand above her eyebrows to shade them from the sun while she looked for me. I imagined myself invisible as I watched her head slowly turn towards me. It must have been my bright red shirt, but she spotted me and screamed, Davy, you get down out of that tree right this instant. Ooh, that made me mad. I was real mad. I looked down at her and sternly replied, no. I had just learned how to climb up a tree. I wanted to crawl out on that big limb and bomb people's heads with tiny pebbles. But most importantly, I didn't know how to get down. Don't you disobey me, my little man. Ooh, I was so mad and frustrated. I immediately remembered that when my dad got mad, he'd say a special word. It was a word that my daddy used all the time when he got mad. I didn't know that it was one of those bad words. A swear word. Well, I was mad, so I said that special word, and when my mother heard me say that naughty word, she grasped her heart with her hands and fainted right there on the porch.
When Mom came to, she punished my daddy by making him take me with him to the mine. Turns out it was the best punishment I'd ever gotten, but that's a story for another time. And that's the beginning of Davy, Mine Camp Boy. This is David Bullock with Tales from the Wasatch Back. This is the story of Davy, Mine Camp Boy. When I was 4 years old, my daddy took me to his mine here in the mountains. He introduced me to the mine camp cook, an overweight woman named Esther. Not having any teeth, her jaw was just beneath her nose, and she had her lower lip covering over her left nostril. As my father worked in the mine, I played and hunted for lizards around camp, which wore me out. I took a nap, and later when I woke up, I saw Esther stirring something in a big bowl. "What you doing, Esther?" "Well, I'm mixing pancake batter, Davy. The miners love pancakes." We sat and talked while she whipped the batter. That's when I learned why Esther kept her nose plugged up with her lower lip. Esther had allergies, and her nose was leaking as she was speaking, and it was dripping off her chin into the pancake batter. "Ew!" I cried, and I ran out of the cabin to tell my daddy. He was talking to the miners, and I ran up to him shouting, "Daddy, Esther's nose was..."
"Davy, hush up. I'm having a meeting."
"But, Daddy, Esther's nose..."
"Davy, go away. Not now."
Ooh, that made me mad. I grabbed a big rock to throw at that red rooster that earlier chased me around pecking at my bottom, and I came around the chicken coop, and there, eating out of the chicken feed bin, was the biggest deer. "You better look out, Mr. Deer, 'cause I'm mad, and I'm going to hit you with this rock." Well, that deer just stood there looking at me with no concern whatsoever. I threw that rock and hit that deer right in the behind. That buck jumped straight up into the air, and when it landed, it lowered its antlered head facing me and began scraping the dirt with its front hooves. I'd watched Popeye cartoons. I knew what that meant. I turned around and ran into Esther's cabin, slamming the door behind me.
"What's the matter, Davy?"
"There's a big deer by the chicken coop that was gonna stick me, Esther. It was gonna stick me." She grabbed up a rifle and popped out that door. Next thing I knew, bang! Scared me so bad, I went to sleep. Later, I woke up, and everything was quiet. Out the window, I saw Esther, my daddy, and his miner sitting at the picnic table eating pancakes. I saw that deer's hide tacked up to the chicken coop. I asked, "Esther, what's that?" She said, "Davy, when you threw that rock at that deer, you plumb scared that deer right out of its hide. He runned off and left his antlers, too. See him?"
Well, Daddy about split a gut and started to chuckle, then caught himself by changing the subject, saying, "Esther, these is the best pancakes I've ever eaten. What is your secret?"
"I know what Esther's secret is."
They all looked at me.
"Esther's nose was leaking in the pancake batter."
Well, that's all it took. The meal was over. The men at the table excused themselves without swallowing or moving their jaws, explaining they had to get back to work. Esther ran to the cabin crying. I felt bad. Daddy told me to apologize to Esther. I went into the cabin and said,
"I'm sorry, Esther, that I gave away your secret recipe."
Esther picked me up and lovingly hugged me and said, "It's okay, Davy, but no one's going to eat my pancakes anymore. I guess from now on, we're just going to have to eat waffles."
This is Dave Bullock with another tale from the Wasatch Back. When I was 4 years old, my dad took me to his mine. I had the time of my life hunting for horny toads and lizards. On one occasion, I heard a low growl coming from behind me. It was a large coyote, warily circling me, snarling. The moment our eyes met, the hackles on his back went up. I knew it was going to kill me. I was scared to death. My dad, in many stories, had told me about his encounters with wild animals such as cougars and bears, and he had explained to me that all of his senses told him to run.
That would have been a mistake, Davy. The best thing to do is turn your back and never look them in the eye.
I wanted to run, but did what my father taught me. The coyote stopped snarling at me and began sniffing the air as though there was a scent that it had taken an interest in. The hackles on its back eased, and it relaxed its posture. The coyote came up to me and began sniffing me, touching me all over my body with its nose. Suddenly, it yipped and jumped into the air in front of me, then pounced on the ground with its front paws a few times. It bumped my hand with its nose and ran around me excitedly. It then licked me on the face, turned, and ran away. I did the same, running toward the mine shack, screaming. I told my dad about the coyote that wanted to eat me, and I told him when I did what he taught me to do, the coyote calmed down, sniffed me, pounced on the ground, yipping excitedly, then licked my face. Dad smiled, hugging me, and said, "That darn coyote, he's still alive after all these years." Dad explained he once had a pet coyote that would do the same thing after they'd been away from each other for a period of time. He explained that in 1946 he was prospecting on a hillside when he heard gunfire and saw ranchers shoot a coyote. They killed it, then rode away. Later, he found her pup yelping for his mother. He picked up the pup and took it back to the mine. For lack of a better name, he called him Coyote, not pronouncing the E. The coyote pup was a playful little critter and played often with the miner. Benjamin, my father, had a family at home and would leave the pup at the mine on weekends, figuring Coyote would have to learn how to fend for himself. Dad told me when he'd return on Monday mornings, Coyote would come a-running to the miner with excitement, jumping into the air, slamming his front paws to the ground, constantly yipping, and then he'd lick the miner's face and run away. Although Coyote was happy to see my dad, he'd rarely allow the man to touch him.
He'd just hang around the camp and watch the miners work, Dad told me.
He said a year or so later, Coyote roamed away, and Dad never saw that coyote again.
Coyote recognized your smell, Davy. You smell like me because we live together, and he was happy to see you. That's why he left you alone instead of eating a tasty little boy. I'll always remember that frightening experience when I met Dad's pet coyote.
Time flies when you're having fun. That's the end of our show today. Want to wish everybody a happy Easter, and especially to Dave, happy birthday.
Goodbye.
I was settling into mine camp life quite comfortably. My mommy had a soon-to-be teenage daughter and two troublesome teenage sons. That was plenty to manage without having a four-year-old disobedient Davy around. So Daddy made arrangements with the mine camp cook, Esther, to watch over me while he worked in the mine. I'll never forget when Daddy took me in his Jeep to the mine tunnel. It was over a mile above camp where Esther lived. I didn't know what a mile was, but with the Jeep, it didn't seem that far. When we got to the tunnel, Daddy led me inside the dark mine. I was afraid at first, but Daddy held my hand and explained that he'd teach me how to be safe. "Davy, if you ever lose your light and find yourself in the dark, slide your feet along the mine rails, and they'll either lead you into or out of the mine, depending on which way you want to go. Also, if you hear a rumbling noise, it's probably the miners pushing the ore car out of the tunnel. If you hear it, Davy, find the widest part of the tunnel and hug the wall, because if that ore car hit you, it could kill you." One day, Esther was taking a nap, and I decided I'd walk up the road and go see my daddy, so I began walking up the mine road. I thought it'd be real close, but it wasn't, and I kept hiking up the trail. The more I kept going, the thirstier I got. My mouth dried up, and I couldn't swallow. I was tired, too, but I wanted to see my daddy, so I kept going. I had hiked a long way, and I cried for my daddy, but he didn't come, so I kept hiking up the long, steep trail. Exhausted, I finally arrived at the mine, but nobody was there.
That meant that I would have to go into the darkness of the mine to see my daddy. And I walked into the mine. It got darker and darker. I didn't know it, but the mine tunnel was almost a mile long, and I knew that my daddy was all the way at the end of the tunnel. I shuffled my feet along the mine rails just like Daddy had told me to do. In the dark, I heard a rumble and knew that the ore car was coming. Afraid, I stepped off the rails and hugged the wall. Moments later, I saw two miners pushing the ore car past me. I kept scooting my feet on the rails until finally I saw Daddy drilling in the end of the tunnel with the jackhammer. It was noisy. I tugged on his yellow slicker mucking pants. Feeling a tug, he looked around but didn't see me. I tugged again. And when he saw me, he just about jumped out of his pants. He was so surprised. "Davy, who brought you up here?" "I walk." "Where's Esther?" "Taking a nap." "How did you get back here without a light?" "I scooted my shoes on the rails like you taught me to do, Daddy."
"Well, didn't you see the ore car, Davy?"
"Yes, Daddy. I hugged the wall just like you told me to do." My dad was so surprised that I'd come all the way to visit him, he told the miners to take the day off because I'd made a special trip to see him, and he wanted to spend time with me. It was a special time. My daddy took me on an adventure that day, but that's another story. This is David Bullock with another tale from the Wasatch Back.
KPCW's Tales from the Wasatch Back, sponsored by Sean Railton, a realtor with Park City Realty Group, and the law firm of Jones, Waldo, Holbrook, and McDonough.